The reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 to 35. Then Peter came up and said to him, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times?" Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you seven times, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything.' And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when that same servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, 'Pay what you owe.' So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you.' He refused and went and put him in prison until he could pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then this master summoned him and said to him, 'You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me, and should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?' And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart."
Well, good morning, everyone. Who's glad they came to church today? Everybody? All right. You're an easy crowd to please today. That's good. Well, this text is a fun one. It's been great to have the kids join us today in church. How are the kids doing? You guys doing good? You guys don't seem as motivated as the parents were this morning. Well, we want to change that today. We want this to involve you as well, all right? So this, what we're reading about and learning about today is for you as well as it is for us as the adults. So when we start off this story, we see in the beginning here that Peter comes to Jesus with a question, like they often did as disciples. And this one, we see Peter asking Jesus how many times he should forgive his brother. And apparently it was known at that time that there was that three times was kind of the number that was aimed for. Like once, you know, you got to give somebody three times. It was kind of in the law that they had created at that time that three times someone does something to you, you know, second time it's getting close, third time you better forgive them again. After that, it's kind of all off for forgiveness. So that was kind of the known thing at that time. And so how many of you have had a brother or sister do something you didn't like? Okay. All right, you're with me. You know what I'm talking about. Have you ever had to forgive them like more than three times? Who here has had to forgive their brother or sister more than three times? Okay, pretty much all of us. Okay, so we're all in the same boat here. So Peter actually probably thought he was really setting the bar high when he said, "Jesus, you know, what if I was to forgive him seven times? Seven, Jesus. Like, would I be super holy then? Would I reach the bar if I forgave them seven times?" And then what does Jesus say? Not seven times. How about 77 times? Can you imagine what's going through Peter's head? He's like, maybe not so holy. Maybe not so great. Jesus, what are you saying? Are you 77 times? Am I supposed to? No, he doesn't want me to count 77. I think he's saying I'm not supposed to keep track. I think I'm supposed to forgive and forgive and forgive and forgive. Unlimited is what it sounds like. So this would have been shocking for Jesus to say this at this time to Peter. And it does raise the question, why did Peter ask this question? And we'll never really know, unfortunately, but the fact that he was in a traveling band with 12 guys, I think our minds can go there, one of them being his brother. There was probably endless opportunities. Probably at that very moment, something had been done that was probably broke the three times mark. Where Peter's like, well, I am here with God, so maybe I should go beyond 3 to 4 or 5. How about 7? So obviously, living as a disciple, close quarters, always together, endless opportunity for some of this. Is that what you experience at home? Why did God create families? So you get to face each other day in and day out, over and over and over again. So what Peter is, the question he's asking here applies to all our lives, because we all have situations where we may have to forgive somebody more than once, twice, or 3 times. And then I love that Jesus tells a story, that he wants to make the point, so he goes to a story. This is one of my favorite things about Jesus. He doesn't reel off 10 theological statements. No, he tells a story. Why? Because stories are fun. And stories you can relate to. And if I'm in the crowd, Jesus is going to tell a story that I could understand. And so we see this story that Jesus tells of a king and a servant. And the servant owed a lot of money, talents, which we have no idea what that is, unless we're really smart and study that. But I don't, so I don't know what a talent is. And then we have a servant who has a servant who also owed him some money, but it was a much smaller amount, denarius, which again, I don't know what that is or how much. But smart people say it was not very much compared to the talents. So I'll trust them and believe them. So there's this huge chasm between a king who forgives a servant a whole bunch of money, money that he could never pay, and then this other servant who owed the servant who was forgiven a little bit of money, but that servant didn't show the same mercy to the other servant. So this is the story that Jesus tells, and it's a great story for people who lived 2,000 years ago and had kings and talents and denarius and servants. But I think if Jesus was here today, I think he would tell that story a little differently. And so perhaps I'm taking liberties that I shouldn't this morning, but I started to think, what story would Jesus tell that would give the same point today in our day and age in this world? And how good would it be if we didn't just hear the story, but we got to live the story? Anybody want to live the story today? Oh, I see some hands. I see some hands. Well, I do need some volunteers. So let's see. I like little volunteers. I see these two right here. Yes, I see two there. I see another one there. Way in the back. Yes, yes, I see that hand. Come on down. More over here. Yes, you two young ladies. Way at the back, young man. Oh, I could do, yes, you, sir, come on down. Let's see, that looks like a good number to start with. All right, let's all line up here. All right. Well, in this version of the story, we've got lots of good helpers. This is good. Well, I want you to picture that all these people live in a town together. Can you picture that, folks? I don't think you can picture it yet, so let me help here. Okay, this will help. In a town, you have different kinds of people in a town, and so you're going to have, you know, your farmers. You're going to have your construction workers. All right, yes. You're going to have your just nice-looking ladies. You're going to have firefighters, there we go. You're going to have kids who ride their bikes. You're going to have sun visors because it's sunny. You're going to have army people. You're going to have probably a few animals too, just because that's kind of the way it is, you know. You're going to have some animals in the town too. Yeah, and maybe one more animal. All right, now you feeling it? You feel like we're in a town now? Does this look like a town? All right, so we've got this town, and in this town there was two little girls that went over to play in the park. And so they came over here. They went over to the park to just go play. You guys are just in the town here. Just enjoy. Do town stuff. All right, the two kids are playing in the park. They're having a great time, and they just happen to find some matches laying on the ground over there. And they find these matches, and unfortunately, these children's parents were delinquent and didn't teach their children not to play with matches. And so, sadly, these children started playing with the matches. And they decided they were going to build a little campfire. And so they lit a match, and they started a little fire in a campfire pit. So they started a fire in the campfire pit. So they started a fire. And a little fire started. And we have a little fire in the campfire pit now. And they're enjoying the fire. But a terrible thing took place. Do you know what happens, moms and dads and boys and girls, when you play with fire? Bad things happen. And the fire jumped out of the fire pit and headed towards the town. And then what happened? All the people had to run from the town back to their parents. And they were scared and they were nervous and they ran away, because the fire's coming and the fire burned down their houses. And it burned down their corrals, and the horses almost got burned. They got out of there just in time. It was a close call. And they all ran back to mom and dad and sat down nice. Except for the two little girls. Where'd the two little girls go? You see, in this story, some other people got involved. One called, I need another helper here. Yes, sir, come on down here. You see, when we burn down entire villages, other people get involved. And so they go and find the two little girls, and they bring the two little girls to court. So go find those two little girls, and I need a couple more helpers. Yes, yes, yes. You want to come? Okay, we got two helpers. Now, once they found the two little girls, where'd they go? They're over here, policemen. What kind of a policeman are you? Not a very good one. Everyone's a suspect. Good point. Find the two little girls. Bring the two little girls. And they brought the two little girls to court. So you guys go over here. Come sit at the table over here. One of you at the table. One of you beside the table. You see, when you burn a whole town down, then you're going to end up going to court. And you're going to have to deal with the judge. And every good judge, I believe it's called a cleric. All right, and every good judge should have a hammer. There we go. All right, now in this part of the story, the policeman brings them to the judge, tells the judges what happened. And then what happened? And so the judge decided that they were guilty. And he had to figure out what would be the penalty. And so he asked the cleric to calculate the cost of rebuilding the town. And so the cleric did some calculations and came up with a number.
One.
One.
Dollar.
Dollar for a whole village? We need a new cleric here, folks. The cleric realized that he made a critical error in his calculations. He recalculated and came up with a much bigger number, like...
Gotta get $2.
$2. This is a pathetic cleric. You're fired. A new cleric came in and decided it would be worth $1 billion. And the judge handed down the sentence to the two girls.
You have to pay
$1 billion.
$1 billion for the village.
Or they would have to go to jail. But the two little girls, did you have $1 billion?
No.
You have a coin? That's probably not $1 billion. So they couldn't pay for the money, and so the policeman said, look, if you don't pay that money, you're going to go to jail.
If you don't pay that money, you're going to go to jail.
But the two little girls begged the policeman and begged the judge, please don't send me to jail. Please don't send me to jail. And so the judge, seeing that they were such cute little girls, made a decision that he... What was the decision he made?
They're still going to jail.
No, this was a nice judge. He made a different decision. Do you know what it was?
They can go.
Yes, but what about the money?
They don't have to pay any more money.
So who's going to pay it?
The policeman is.
No, he didn't choose the policeman. He just... His dad's a doctor? That doesn't matter. The judge... The judge decided to let them go and to pay the bill for them on their behalf, remember?
No.
I gotta pick some new actors next time. These guys are... So the judge decided to pay the debt for them and set them free, and they were so excited. And they ran home to tell their parents about the exciting news. But on the way home, they came this way, and they ran into a little boy, a little farmer friend, and they were excited to see each. And then they remembered that this little friend had borrowed something of theirs. Do you remember what that was?
Our bike.
You borrowed their bike. Do you remember borrowing that?
Didn't the biker do that?
No, you did. You borrowed their bike. Do you remember borrowing their bike?
No.
Here, let me help you. Think for a minute. Okay, now do you remember?
I borrowed their motorcycle.
Sure, we'll go with that. You borrowed their motorbike. And then something happened to the motorbike. Do you remember what it was?
It burnt.
It burnt? Didn't see that one coming. This is the problem with working with kids. You never know where these stories are going to go. I'm sure Jesus had his stories more contained. So what about the other bike that you borrowed from them and you left in the street? What happened to that one?
I don't know.
Do you remember when it was on the street and that big thing?
A car crushed it.
Yes. A car ran over the bike, so he didn't have the bike to give back to the kids. And what was their response to this situation?
How dare you? You owe us a lot of money now.
Yes, they wanted their bike back. So they were mad, and they told him, if you don't give me my bike back right now or buy me a new one, I'm going to go tell my mommy.
I'll go tell my mommy. You'll be in big trouble.
But the little boy didn't have the money or a bike to give him. So he ran away sad, and they ran away to go tell their mommy what had happened. Their mommy and daddy's over here. Come sit over here. They ran to their daddy, and they told him what happened. They said, oh, wait a minute, he doesn't look like your daddy. Just a minute. Here we go. There, now he looks more like your daddy. So the kids ran to their daddy and they told him what had happened, that this little boy had borrowed their bike and now it's broken. They wouldn't give him back. And how do you think the daddy responded in this situation?
I'm going to need some good prompts, Jeff.
Well, I'm here for you, buddy. The daddy thought about it for a minute. And then he realized... This isn't good.
This is really bad.
because daddy worked really hard to save up money to get a nice bike for their birthday.
I bought you a really nice bike for your birthday.
So he was getting a little frustrated with the situation.
You wouldn't believe how frustrated I am right now.
And so the daddy decided what all good daddies would do in this situation, that he was going to solve this problem, and he was going to contact those other parents and make sure he figured out how to get their bike back.
I'll make sure the farmer's parents get that bike back. They're delinquent parents as well.
So, now, this is the crazy part of this story, is that a little birdie heard what happened in this situation here. And the little birdie flew to the judge. And the little birdie told the judge what had happened. And the judge could not believe it. And he said,
guilty.
And he reversed everything he had just done and sent the policeman to go get the little girls and bring them back to the court. And he dragged the little girls kicking and screaming back to the court where they had to face the judge again, and the judge said,
guilty.
And he reversed his decision and made them have to pay the $1 billion and be taken off to jail with the jailer, and that is the end of the story.
Oh, that's good.
Let's give our helpers a big hand. Thank you, guys. So I don't know if that helps at all today, but I just thought a version of the story that we could relate to and understand might be helpful. And the amazing part of the story that Jesus highlights here is the massive chasm between the two ways, the two situations that are represented there. And the funny thing is that when you really think about it, if we eliminate the first situation in both these stories, with the king and the judge forgiving the debt, if we remove that part of the story and we were just to tell the second part of the story, someone owed a debt, they couldn't pay. The people that the money was owed to wanted justice, wanted consequences. That sounds like a pretty normal story, don't you think? Don't we all encounter situations like that and think that way and function that way? But when we take that story and we put it up against the first part of the story, suddenly it's like, it changes the way we think about the second story. Because the first part of the story is shocking. It's shocking mercy. It's shocking forgiveness. It doesn't make sense. It's not logical. And it kind of blows our minds when we read that story. And so in this story, when we hear about what God is like, what his mercy is like. And in this case, he's speaking, Jesus is teaching his disciples, people who are now part of the family of God, following God. And he is telling them, you have experienced this kind of mercy in your life from God. This is the level, the depth, the height. So now, everything else you face in life, you have to look at differently. He starts off the story by saying, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. And we've been on this journey to understand the kingdom of heaven because it's so radically different than the world that we live in and the way that we naturally think. It is so different. And the kingdom of heaven, when we compare it to ourselves, when we compare God's nature to ours, it's always going to shock us. And so certainly in this situation, Jesus was shocking them. And then he ends this story with perhaps an even more shocking statement, which I will reread here for you. In chapter 18, verse 34 and 35, he says, "In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all that he owed. And this is how my heavenly Father will treat each one of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart." Now, I don't know about you, but did Jesus just say that? That sounds pretty harsh. And what is he saying exactly? Is he saying that unless I'm willing to forgive, that all that mercy and forgiveness that God is offering me, that he's going to take that back? Is that what Jesus is saying here? And the truth is, there's great debate on this issue. Can you lose your salvation once you have it? Or is it yours forever? That's a really good question. It's a question that a lot smarter people than me have debated back and forth on both sides, and I'm not even going to attempt to answer today. Because I think if that's the most important question to you, and you're living your life in the gray zone, and you need a theologian to determine whether you're saved or not, then I just wouldn't want to be in your shoes, let's put it that way. I wouldn't want to be in the gray zone. And if you're in the gray zone, that's not the place you want to be in. So Jesus helps us to know if we're in the gray zone by making it clear if we've encountered the love and the mercy of God, which is new every morning, then that's going to impact us. And there's going to be fruit that comes out of our life. And our life is going to look different because we have encountered that at the deepest level. And so this morning, we're not here to have theological debates on this subject, but we are here to hear what Jesus is saying. And there's some pretty strong things. What he is saying, undoubtedly, is that there is consequences to unforgiveness. Here it says, we will be handed over to the jailers to be tortured. And having worked in pastoral ministry for many years now and working with folks, I can tell you I know exactly what he's talking about here. That when we are unwilling to forgive, that we give the enemy a foothold in our lives that he is now going to torture us with. And torture us, and torture us, and torture us. And all Jesus is saying by that statement is that I'm going to let you have what it is you want. You want to hold on to unforgiveness, then I'm going to let you hold on. And when you hold on, the Bible tells us there are strongholds that you now give the enemy in your heart and in your soul, that he has the right to torture you. And this is the seriousness of this situation. And I can guarantee you, as God's people, when we hang on to unforgiveness, when we are unwilling to forgive, then we are giving the enemy the right to torture us. Because as we hang on to that, then the bitterness grows in our hearts. And it grows, and it grows. So does the torture the enemy has with it and his ability to use it against us. And pretty soon the offenses take over our lives and produce rot in our very souls. And we do not become the people of God that the kingdom describes. We become the very opposite, very hard and cold. And so that is not God's desire for his people. And so I know Jesus is telling the story because he has a totally different picture for people who have been offered such mercy and invited into the kingdom of God, invited to have access to the King of Kings, where his mercy is new every morning, where everything I've done wrong and messed up, that he is there offering forgiveness to me. How then, with the massive debt that I could never pay, that he has paid for me, cleansed me of, washed me of, set me apart from, freed me from, all the consequences, all our entire year of Corpus Focus. If you haven't had time to think about all that God has done, then Corpus 1 is a great year for you to even get the tip of the iceberg, to just focus on what has God done? How much has he done for us? And then when we get a taste of that, how incredible that is, how can I not live differently in the little encounters I have day in and day out? And just like Peter, you and I are rubbing shoulders with each other. We have our earthly families that drive us crazy sometimes. We have our church families which drive us crazy sometimes. We have our church leadership that pretty much always, I'm sure, drives us crazy. We have all these people in our lives who are inadequate, incapable, imperfect, and God sits there and he loves that we're all stuck together, because it's an opportunity to learn these kind of valuable lessons that I have to learn how to forgive. It doesn't appear in this that it's an option, that Jesus is giving us the option to forgive one another. It sounds like he's commanding it, that it's part of being a Christian, it's part of our lives that we must understand and live differently and live with kingdom mentality. What God has done should impact us at the deepest, deepest parts of our hearts. And stories like this are like a gauge for us. The Bible is full of these things where God gives us a new gauge, a new standard, where he's the standard, his kingdom is the standard, and I now measure myself to that, not to the person beside me, not to my circumstances, not to what so-and-so says, but God is the new standard, and I need to rise up to that. But that's what is expected of God's people and his children. And so God, whether we're boys and girls with brothers and sisters, whether we're moms and dads, whoever we are going to be full of offenses in this world. I can't go through a day without getting offended about something, where somebody does something that ticks me off, and I'm guessing you're probably the same. And that's either going to grow in my heart, or I'm going to learn to forgive. And God wants us to live free. So the question this morning is, who do I still need to forgive? Where is unforgiveness literally rotting me on the inside? And I don't want to make light of some of the things that some of you have faced in this world. We face some awful, awful things. There has been abuse done to some of you, physical, emotional, sexual, every kind of horrible thing has been done in this world. As people, we just destroy each other. We do horrible things. And from our perspective, it looks huge. It looks unforgivable. But when we take that and we put it up to the gauge of God and his standards, then we're left with no choice. We have to find the way. But as with everything with God, it's for our benefit that he wants us to be free. So I end with a couple of thoughts for you to help you with forgiveness. Number one, forgiveness. When I choose to forgive somebody, it is not belittling what has just happened. It's not pretending it didn't happen. In fact, it's actually giving acknowledgement to it and saying, that did happen, and it hurt me deeply, and it's not okay. And so that's the first step of forgiveness, is recognizing that something wrong was done. And we have to embrace that was wrong and it was not okay and it has affected me deeply. So in no way is forgiving belittling what was done. Number two, it's not based on feelings. So I don't forgive because I feel like forgiving. If I wait till I feel like forgiving, it's never going to happen. Forgiveness starts with a choice of the will. It's me saying to myself, to my soul, to my will, that I will forgive because that is God's way. And no matter how much this hurt me, no matter how much this has ruined me, no matter the effects, no matter how much this ticks me off, I make the choice that I will forgive because that's what God would want me to do in this situation. And it's often not based on reality. So whether they meant to hurt you, whether it was really offensive or worthy of offensive, or whether we bring it to a court and they decide, yes, it was, no, that doesn't matter. The fact is it's affected me. And from my opinion, I'm now offended. And so if once I'm offended, there's only one option from there. Whether they deserve it or need it, it doesn't matter. It's a choice that I need to make once I've crossed the line in my heart and taken offense. And what it ultimately does when we choose to forgive is it removes that foothold for the enemy. It gives him nothing to stand on. And then when you see that person and the enemy's like, remember when they did this and this and this and this? You can stand on that forgiveness and say, no, I have chosen to forgive them. And you might still feel some things. You notice how the feelings don't go right away? You see them, they're still feelings, but... And now you have a chance to either continue in forgiveness or be re-offended. And this is a critical juncture. Now that I've seen them and those emotions have come back, and I remember what they did, I have a chance to embrace offense again and go back to square one. Or I have the choice to say, no, I'm choosing forgiveness. And it's an act of my will, and sometimes you got to say it, Lord, I choose to forgive them. It helps if it's verbal. And lastly, what this does is it opens up the opportunity for God now to get a foothold. You've given the Lord a foothold, and so he can pour out his blessing on you because you're functioning on kingdom principles and not worldly, not man's principles, not the principles that come natural to me. Boys and girls, when someone does something wrong to you, what's the first thing that's so natural is to want to do something back. That's as natural as breathing, but God's ways are very different. And then lastly, God gives us the opportunity to deal with the emotions that we feel with that. We can come to him with our emotions and say, God, I don't know what to do with these now. That hurt me deeply, and I need your help with these emotions, with these feelings. And the great exchange takes place where God says, I'll take those. And my Holy Spirit is in you, and so he's going to give you peace and love and joy and all the good things that I have for you. And we get to do that exchange. So that's the heart of God when it comes to forgiveness. That's the heart he has for us. And so as we move to communion now, we have the opportunity on a weekly basis to go and receive that mercy afresh and anew. The mercy of the Lord, which is new every morning. We get to stand in that, to think about that, to focus on that as our gauge, to realign our lives with that as the central figure, and every good thing can come from there.